Coming up on the Shelley Irwin Show podcast today, John Covington joins in to talk about West Michigan Tonight. We talk to a doctor from Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan about Alzheimer's and brain health awareness. With this weekend is July 4th and the continued warm weather. We talk about pet safety. Guests on behalf of Michigan State University's College of Human Medicine share how First Steps Kent is involved with RX Kids. This year is the 100th anniversary of the National Cherry Festival. We discuss that. And we talk about osteopathic medicine and why it's important to the future of healthcare.
John Covington, host of West Michigan Tonight. It's seen Friday nights on WZZM. We're going to get into the details. You, John, well known to our media world. Let's talk about your platform and more, which includes a little Grand Rapids trivia, John. Is that part of your program?
West Michigan trivia. Yeah, West Michigan trivia.
Oh, John Covington, we've talked before. We'll talk again. I was looking through some of my photos. I mean, you used to, I had you on TV. We've done over the phone for your Muskegon world. And now we'll get to it. But you did turn the tables on me. Congratulations on what's going on in your life.
Thank you so much, Shelley. Great to be here.
Yeah, your wife listens to the show?
Every day, every morning. Every morning.
That still surprises me, but thank
every
you very
morning.
Much.
Every morning. No, you're one of the best.
So say hi.
Will do.
Okay.
She's listening now.
John Covington, congratulations, host of West Michigan Tonight. I was a guest. You'll see our work this Friday night. It's not about me, but I was very impressed, and the tables were turned. Tell me more about you and how this came to be under your, conception.
Yeah, well, I was working on another project, and then at like 4 a.m. in the morning, I had this revelation. And it was build a bridge. And I was like, build a bridge? No, seriously, it was clear as day. And I grabbed my iPad on the side of the bed, which I keep it there for moments, right? And I started creating in that moment and didn't stop until the show was on the air, which was 2 months later?
Yeah.
Yeah, less than 3 months.
Yes. So, again, in this media world, you're still new at it. Doesn't seem like it when you're on set. But, that's an inspiration to always keep your pad next to your bed, right?
Yeah, your phone, your iPad, a notepad. Yeah.
4 a.m., world. Mm-hmm. So how would you describe West Michigan Tonight?
West Michigan Tonight is typical late night talk. That means there's a band. That means there's a live audience. Mm-hmm. That means that it's a little moody. That means you got some real crazy games. Mm-hmm. But in this case, I call it infotainment centered around West Michigan, all things West Michigan, people, places, things, small businesses, restaurants, nightlife, entertainers, live performers who are based here in West Michigan, country music artists, R&B, rock, hip hop. Folk music, all of the above. West Michigan has one of the most dynamic, it's one of the most dynamic regions of live performers, like who are born and raised here or who are transplants here, just an array of talent. And I said, hey, they need a platform, and so let's create one. And that's where the building the bridge comes in at.
Tell me about your studios are not at Channel 13. You have wonderful studios that includes your great hair and makeup.
Janae Johnson.
Janae was wonderful. And behind the scenes, all of the gentlemen. And, of course, I had a couple of your rappers on. They'll be on the show next week.
I know. I saw that. Wow. Exodus. They're chopping high cotton. I saw that. Wow.
They said, we want more of this interview stuff. You're on Friday nights at what time?
11:35 p.m.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You are so much like, do I equate you to like the Tonight Show or is that, I haven't watched, in bed by,
It's on 11:35 p.m., but the beauty of modern technology is that you can see it anytime. So you can see it Saturday morning or you can see it Sunday or you can see it next week. It lives on the internet, West Michigan Tonight. Just type that in. And you can see the current episode once that's out, and you can see previous episodes. So the episode that you're on is number 5. Oh. this coming Friday.
Yes.
Lucky Five.
Yes. And what a wonderful guest I had, you had with me.
Jerry White.
Yes.
Of Reflections, that whole Reflections empire. And the two of you together is absolutely hysterical.
I think it was hysterical.
It was hysterical.
Right.
And it was hysterical.
You don't say that to everybody.
No, of course not.
You've got adjectives for each.
Well, it's, most of the people I have adjectives for, but you and Jerry White were just a hoot together, and I can't wait for people to see it.
What's let's go. First of all, thank you. It was wonderful. It's tough to go behind to be on the other side, as they say, and. No, I didn't ask for questions. What kind of questions?
You did not.
No,
nobody has.
And I don't, even as an interviewer, I don't like to send you my questions because you'll read your answers.
Absolutely.
You know, you'll be canned.
Yeah, and XYZ at 10 a.m., you know, it's boring. It's not exciting. It lacks energy.
You didn't give me the questions to your West Michigan trivia, so
I did not.
Stand by to see the winner of that. I think it was a tie. How do you...
No, it wasn't.
John Covington with us again, West Michigan Tonight. Tune in 11:35 on Channel 13 this Friday night or on your social media. And that will be at where?
It's all across
it's West Michigan.
If you just
Tonight. Type
in West Michigan Tonight in your Google bar, the show will pop up for you in the different platforms, the different ways that you can see it, which includes 13onyourside.com. It includes YouTube. It includes another format. So it's all over the place. It premieres Friday night, 11:35 on WZZM 13 Plus.
John, so how do you determine your guests? Obviously, it's fun for other hosts to be interviewed, but you've got a lot of unique opportunities to get the word out. To bridge, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as it relates to people like you and Juliet Dragas, who was our very first guest.
Yes, that's
that was our first latest shows. I had a list of people who I said, I want these people on the shows, and I want them on the shows right out the gate. So I created that list. And then the team, I've got an army of people who work on the show.
Very kind and very cool.
Thank you. And they then provide people whom they think, you know, this person I think would be good on the show. But we also have a form on our social media. We've got a submission form where you just go through and you just click the things, boom, and it'll ask you what type of guest would you like to be. And then they just hit the submit button. Our team gets a submit button. They get an automatic response, and we comb through every single submission. So we want the show to look like West Michigan in its entirety.
John, how will you determine success of this venture?
That's a great question. We determine it's already been crazily successful, and WZZM, of course, has markers. The show, because of people like you and because of these other amazing guests who people want to see more of. So everybody knows Shelley, WGVU, the Shelley Irwin Show, this media icon, right?
Thank you.
But do you know some of the other things about her that you find out on a show like West Michigan Tonight? Because West Michigan Tonight is really centered around entertainment for the most part. That's why I call it infotainment, information in an entertaining platform, infotainment. But people want to know about the people that they see or hear every day. You found out things about Juliet Dragas that you wouldn't know by watching the 6 o'clock news.
Yeah.
You wouldn't know some of these things about her just from that particular platform. So West Michigan Tonight really elevates not just the folks who are on the show, but just West Michigan as a whole. And people are watching it from all over the country.
What do we need to know about John Covington that we may not know about?
Well, I was an interesting thing. I was born in Muskegon, Michigan, and grew up between Muskegon and Grand Rapids, Michigan. And I attended 10 schools between grades K through 11. Nobody was in the military, so it wasn't like a traveling thing. So a very interesting environment growing up. But I think part of that is what made it where I don't know strangers and where I'm comfortable in a myriad of environments, right? And I think that works for a show like West Michigan Tonight.
Yes. And obviously, the world is your oyster. How was the? Didn't you do the documentary and the work with the art museum on the Black Men productions?
Yeah, I did.
That was wonderful as well.
And it's still traveling the country. Yeah.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Black Man is the name of the documentary. And people say, well, what is that exactly? And it's screened all over the country. It's screening at the DeSable Museum in Chicago soon, which is a Smithsonian Institute. But I tell them it's the black man in ways you probably not seen. And it's just a very humanizing project that's been very popular for all races and cultures of people around the country.
All right, back to the hat that you wear currently with the many responsibilities you carry, host of West Michigan Tonight. How can the community help?
Oh, wow. Well, we're always looking for sponsors and advertisers, and, of course, viewers don't hurt. We love the viewers. If you know of something that's happening that should be on our show, something that we should feature on our show, by all means, reach out to us, social media, West Michigan Tonight, or we've got info at wmtonight.com. You can shoot us an email.
Thanks to you and, of course, your team for the wonderful opportunity I had. We'll see that Friday night, but we'll see every show Friday night. All right, John Covington, back you go to prepare for your next show.
Yeah, we're working on the show right now.
As you should.
Thank you, Shelley.
Let's catch up with Dr. William Beecroft, Medical Director of Behavioral Health at Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan, doing great things and talking about necessary things. Alzheimer's and Brain Awareness Month was just this last month, but we'll continue to discuss because it's in, obviously, many of our lives. How timely, how important do we need to discuss the topic of Alzheimer's and brain awareness? Dr. Beecroft, good morning to you.
Good morning, and thank you for your time today. It's an extremely important thing. As the baby boomers are getting older, Alzheimer's disease is a larger problem as far as numbers of people. In the United States alone, it's about 6 million people have a dementia of some sort or another, Alzheimer's being the primary one, probably making up 50% of that number. So it's a big issue.
It's a big issue as, again, one may not have control once symptoms begin. So much to talk about in our little time. Discuss, if you would, in general, brain aging. I trust we're all, it's not correlated with when I'm 90, I'll be experiencing the diagnosis?
Exactly. The biggest group of our population as far as growth is centenarians. So, you know, it is pretty incredible how people, when they take care of their brain and maintain its function, can be able to be, in quotes, sharp as a tack when they're in their late 90s and hundreds even. So it is how you take care of your brain. That is a big important piece of this.
It's obviously much to answer when I ask you, how best do I take care of my brain?
Well, what's good for the heart's good for the brain. So the things that we've been told from primary care and our internists and just medicine in general of keeping your cholesterol under control, being able to eat an adequate diet, sleep adequately, limit your use of substances. You know, those kinds of things, and exercise, I'm sorry, forgot that. That's an important piece. All of those things are really important to be able to do that. And if you do and use your brain, that's a big issue here as well. It's one of those things, again, another, bucolic a statement, is use it or you lose it. It is true. I was doing some looking at what the average vocabulary is for people, and it's somewhere around 30 to 70,000 words, but the functional vocabulary is between 5 and 10,000 words, the things you use every day. So the more words, the more communication you do with others, the more you keep that brain sharp because you're using not only your vocabulary, but you're thinking about what you're going to say well before you say it even. So you're using that processing capability. You're keeping that central processing unit in your brain quick. And that's the thing. The brain age is really how rapidly, how quickly you can respond to what's going on in your environment, what questions you're being asked, what things you have to think about, what kind of problems you have to solve. All of those things go into keeping that processing speed up to its optimal for you.
Dr. William Beecroft with us, talking all things Alzheimer's Brain Awareness Month. We just presented in June. We continue the conversation. Talk to me about the importance of sleep.
Sleep is really important. You know, many times people feel that they can go with 3 or 4 hours of sleep, and there's some people that can. But most people need between 7 and 9 hours of sleep as an adult. Kids need more because they're actually working harder in their brain to process and learn new information. So even though they would like to go to bed at midnight and wake up at 6, but really have a hard time functioning before noon, kids really need that 10, 12 hours of sleep sometimes to be able to do all of the growth and reframing of their brain. The brain is what's called plastic. It continues to grow throughout our lifetime. It models itself, and modeling means just changing its connections all the time. So being able to learn that, that takes energy, that takes work, and that's mostly happens before we're in our 20s. But as we get older, it still is important to learn new things as you get older to be able to keep that brain sharp.
Lastly, talk to me about staying socially connected.
Again, it goes back to this issue of vocabulary. Even if you're not talking, being with others, being socially pleasant, being able to have the interaction, the nonverbal interactions with other people, all of those things are really important to keep the brain sharp and to keep it processing, again, as rapidly as it can. If you're isolating, it really is bad. And one of the things that is really something that we don't take enough care of is our hearing. That as you get older, many times even younger people will lose hearing capability because of the work environment that they're in, the social environment that they're in, whatever that is, that the high frequencies get lost over a period of time. And you continue to decrease the stimulation in the brain and then consequently the ability to process new information because you can't hear it. So being able to take good care of your hearing, use hearing protection when you're younger, keep things below 80 decibels, you know, if you're listening to music and that sort of thing at 120 decibels, probably that's going to not do well for you when you're in the 30s and 40s. And if you do need hearing aids or hearing amplifiers, there are relatively inexpensive ones. There are some hearing amplifiers for even $10 or $20. So they're relatively very inexpensive to be able to use. They're not as sophisticated as a very expensive hearing aid, but they help with that being able to continue that hearing option for people that are economically compromised.
Yes. Alzheimer's Brain Awareness. Continue your good work in spreading the word. Dr. William Beecroft, how do we find out more information? What's a good resource for us?
BCBSM.com, and if you search the mental health, behavioral health section, we have lots of information there. It's a public site, so basically people can go and look on that and get all of this background information. Google is a great place to search. PubMed, which is a entity that has publications about new technologies, new things like the treatment of Alzheimer's and some of the other dementias that are available. Those are good. Mayo Clinic, Cleveland Clinic, all of those are great resources to be able to educate yourself on something that if you think you've got a difficulty with memory, you think you've got some processing difficulties, being able to come up with words quickly, helping to know the difference between mild cognitive impairment, which is normal, and when you get into the issue of a dementia, in which there are several different types.
Sure. We could go on. Dr. Beecroft, thank you for your service and continue a day at a time. Take care to you.
Take care as well.
Dr. Michael Q. Bailey, appreciate your leadership, president of the AVMA. Of course, that stands for your American Veterinary Medical Association. I hope you have a dog at home. Here to talk about some tips and tricks and more on pet safety. Good morning to you.
Good morning. How can I help you?
Well, you know what, Dr. Bailey? First of all, let me keep you credible. Are there pets at home at the Bailey residence?
Oh, there are lots of pets here. We have a little hairy Swedish Balhoon, which is a Swedish cattle dog. And my son has, of course, his little rescue dog, not so little, who travels all over the country with him.
Thank you for that. And thank you for, again, your leadership, the American Veterinary Medical Association. I want to talk about some opportunities to keep our pets safe. And let's get right into the details. The fireworks sounds are already starting in my backyard, and it not only keeps me up, but keeps my four-legged family up as well. So how do I keep my pets safe when the fireworks are going off, Dr. Bailey?
Well, you know, I actually start this off with something that's going to serve you well all year long. Make sure your pets have adequate identification on them, whether on their collar or even preferably an RFID chip, where you've made sure that your current contact information is updated in the database. Why do I say this? Because if your pet gets away from you any time of year, this is a very common time of year for that to happen, there's a way for the pet to be identified and returned to you. And by the way, this works for dogs and cats. So let's start there. Also, with this warm time of year, let's make sure that we're thinking about the fact that our pets eliminate heat through their respiration. They carry moisture, hot moisture, out of their body. So you want to make sure that they have an adequate amount of cool drinking water, not cold, cool drinking water, and that there's air circulating where they are.
Why not cold?
It's just the fact that it can upset their stomach. So we don't want to take that chance. We want them to be able to have it cool. But you know, when we say cold, we're talking, we don't want it to be a block of ice.
There we are. Hey, now, people have issues with that as well. Let me ask you about never leaving our pet in the car when it's warm outside.
Oh, thank you for bringing that up. Here's the thing. People will say, you know, I'm just going to run in for a minute and I'll leave the car running. Well, first of all, modern cars have a timer on them that will shut the cars off after a few minutes. So that means you think you're inside the air conditioning running and the air conditioning's turned off. That car will reach to well over 100 degrees in just a matter of minutes. Never leave a person or a pet inside the car while you run inside. If you don't have somebody who can at least be there with them, take them home and then do your errand.
Again, we take it for granted that we know everything, but one slip is a catastrophe. And I like this. I'm not quite ready to end the celebration, but after the celebration, you ask us to check our yard or anywhere pets walk for firework debris, for scraps of food, yes?
Oh, yes. You know, it's not just food. It's any food-related material, aluminum foil, those skewers you might have had a kebab on. Make sure that there are no extra things sitting around. And you know those fireworks, particularly the sparkers that have those metal shafts on them? If you have any of those going in your yard, get everybody to collect them beforehand because you don't want your pet stepping on them or lying on them. And while we have this hot temperatures that are coming along, you might want to see how best does your pet tolerate. If your pet doesn't tolerate the temperatures or the noise very well, might want to find a room inside the house, which you can get them comfortable in. Have their favorite bed there. Go in there and rub their belly. And I tell people, turn on talk radio or music, whatever they prefer, which helps drown the noise out or at least muffles it. And remember, our pets can sense the vibration and the noise 3 to 4 times the distance away that we can. So when you're looking at them and wondering, what got you upset? It's probably they're feeling the noise from 5-10 miles down the road even.
Yes, talking all things, obviously, pet safety as we move into this holiday weekend. President of the American Veterinary Medical Association, Dr. Michael Bailey with us. Remind me of the good work of the association.
Oh, the American Veterinary Medical Association is always trying to move the profession forward, and we have 111,000 members all across the country who we are trying to make sure that they have the best information. And if you want more information, you can always get on our website, avma.org.
Anything else we need to know? A pet is good for our mind, body, and soul?
Well, you know, once again, going back to things like food, it's not just those skewers and whatnot, but little things you don't think about. Grapes can be deadly to your dog. And then there are other foods which can lead to GI upset or even pancreatitis. So ask friends, do not feed your pet food. You can even make some pet-friendly food. So if they want to give them, come over here and grab the pet-friendly food, and you're welcome to give that to them.
On it. Thank you very much. Hello to your critters, and keep up your good work with the association as we do keep our family safe this holiday weekend. Thank you, Dr. Bailey.
Thank you very much. Have a safe holiday weekend.
Well, are you ready to experience a 100th celebration? You bet. Not just a 250 celebration for the US of A, but let's put the spotlight on the 100th edition of your National Cherry Festival. Hopping a skip up to Traverse City we go. I look forward to this conversation. Kat Pay, how long have you been planning for this, my friend?
Well, we've been planning for it for a while, along with America's Big Birthday.
You, executive director of course, the National Cherry Festival, which kicks off, yes, July 4th through the 11th. Okay, well, what's bigger and better for this year?
Oh, you know, I don't know about bigger and better, but it is definitely bigger. So we are, normally we have around 150 events over the 8 days. I think we're probably more like 160 now. Some of them do repeat, which is awesome. We have an incredible historical exhibit where you can see two-dimensional and three-dimensional great artifacts of festivals before us, from the 1926 Queen's dress to the original crowns to the photographs, amazing pieces that you can see and look at and go, oh my goodness, this happened more than 100 years ago. So we love that their historical exhibit is there. We're debuting our documentary tomorrow night, and then that'll, of course, be played during festival next week as well. There is the Milk Carton Boat Regatta, which is a huge event from the past. So much fun. 12 boats have entered so far, families and businesses alike, in multiple categories. I noticed one went out for a float test the other day. Good news, it floats. And the bed races are back, which is another piece of nostalgia that went on for decades. Lots of beds have been entered, and that will take place before the Community Royal Parade on Thursday night. And then I've got the staples, the pie eating, the pit spit, the bubblegum blow, the sand sculpture contest, the $1 million hole-in-one, the air shows, the concerts, the races. I know you're ready.
I am, but let's not digress. Yes, those Meyer Festival of Races, a good way to close out on that 11th. Wow. So again, what a team. Tell me about those ambassadors. Are they ready?
They are ready. They are ready and excited and rolling out that red carpet for everyone to come to Northern Michigan in just about 72 hours. They're fired up. They've got their T-shirts. They've got their name tags. And they're probably doing their stretching and working on their hydration because it is warm. As setup week is happening right now, the tents, tables, and chairs are getting put out. And it is a little toasty up here as we are working through that heat.
We must be careful what we wish for as, well, the summer season is here, as will be the formal start of your National Cherry Festival in beautiful Traverse City. Tell me more about the answer to the question I always ask. What's the state of the cherry?
The cherry, it depends on which grower you ask, and it depends on where the farm is located. So I've heard a few different things. Some growers say that there was some damage due to the spring and a quick thaw or a late fall or a, you know, depends on who you talk to. And then some have said we're good and we'll have a great crop. It is not going to be ready for the cherry festival from what I understand. Local cherries are probably going to be a week or a week and a half later. So they'll probably be maybe end of next week, if not the week after, is what we're looking at right now for our region up here. But again, it is dependent on the area and kind of where we get the cherries. And a lot of our growers up here in northern Michigan have farms down by you, actually in west Michigan. So we still anticipate, depending on when they're shaking, having Michigan cherries. And if not, then we will ask our neighbors to the west to still make sure we have U.S. cherries, if nothing else. So, yeah.
Nice. Kat Pay, Executive Director, National Cherry Festival, again, kicking off this Saturday formal. What about, I guess I'll go with entertainment. Again, tickets available for me as well?
Okay, yes, we've got tickets available at cherryfestival.org for our full schedule of events and our full lineup. there is still many options available for all those great nights of concerts. We've got Chase Matthews, Lauren Elena. We've got Soulja Boy, Bow Wow, Daughtry. Lots of things over those 8 days. Tickets are available for all of our concerts still to go. And then, of course, those wonderful race registrations for the Festival of Races.
Again, come one, come all for the many different distances as well. All right. So what do the next 100 years look like, Kat?
Oh, well, in a couple of weeks, it looks like a little nap. And then we are going to continue on celebrating our favorite fruit up here in the cherry capital of the world, as we have for the last 100 years. We're going to continue on doing what we do best, which is celebrating our favorite fruit, having great parades, celebrating generations of fun, and getting those memories for everyone involved.
Does the Queen have her wave down?
Oh, Queen Ainsley does have her wave down, and I think the four court members have also gotten their wave down. So we are pretty excited to see what happens at the end of the week.
Never get sick of a cherry, as they say. All right, Cap, hey, details one more time. I'm on your website. It certainly is thorough for tickets and other venues. Where do I head?
Yes, for a full schedule of events and to plan your visit, cherryfestival.org. We also have a Places to Stay tab, so you can come check out hotel options and things for our friends over at TraverseCity.com, Traverse City Tourism.
This in it together. All right, roving microphone on site, running shoes ready, looking forward to sharing your story. Kat Pay, stay the course. Congratulations on a 100th year coming up. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Get into our conversation. RX Kids is the nation's first ever community-wide prenatal and infant cash prescription program. It provides life-changing financial security, universal and unconditional. Let's turn to my next guest to talk about it. First Steps Kent serves as the community champion in the 49507 zip code. So let's talk about enrolling and more. I want to get the best outreach manager for First Steps Kent, Elise Green. Good morning, Elise.
Good morning.
All right, I'm going to ask in your words, what is RX Kids?
RX Kids is a cash prescription program that helps expecting moms and people who have babies for the first 6 months of life. They do this through cash for $1,500 for when you are prenatal, and then $500 for the first 6 months of life.
How does RX Kids then, Elise, fit with First Step Kent's mission?
Yeah, First Steps Kent has been a champion for early childhood work since the beginning of the organization, and we have been the fiduciaries for the Early Childhood Millage, as well as done work and impact and advocacy for early childhood initiatives. So for RX Kids, this feels like another area that we can help support our families and mothers in our early, our new residents of Kent County and 49507.
So I trust you would agree it kind of makes sense that your First Step Kent's is the community champion for the launch?
I would agree with that, yes.
Yeah, it's good to be a champion. Let's dig into the details. Talk to me about some of the challenges that women and families face during pregnancy and early childhood.
Yeah, so when you are expecting, no pregnancy is normal. Sometimes moms have to leave work early, or a baby is born prenatal, or there are complications during the pregnancy where it can be expensive. And when a child is born, you know, you have that maternity leave where there's limited income coming into the house, which can increase the stress. And we know that when there's increased stress, when a child is in utero and also when a child is born, that it can cause an increase of ACE, or just they can take on that stress, but can impact their development. So with this cash prescription program, it helps to reduce that stress. It helps a mom be able to bond with their child and really just have an opportunity to breathe and celebrate this new baby that's in their lives.
So RX Kids has been around for more than, I think, 2 years now in other Michigan communities. What impact are you seeing that it has on families and communities?
Yeah, RX Kids actually started in 2024 in Flint, Michigan. And what the data is showing is that there is a reduced number of prenatal births, low birth rates, postpartum depression. Parents are able to stay within their homes. There's less of CPS referrals or calls because of this amazing program.
Wonderful. What, I guess, let me ask even who is eligible and how do we sign up? Some action items here.
Yeah, if you live within 409-507, you can go to rxkids.org and hit apply now, and you'll be able to answer a few questions. I'm wanting to know your identity, where you live, your residency, how far along you are in your pregnancy, and if you had your baby, was the baby born on today or later? So that could be a birth certificate showing also that you're the parent or guardian of the child.
And this just kicked off like today, correct?
Yes, applications opened at 9 o'clock this morning.
Again, timely conversation. Are there deadlines associated with this?
There are no deadlines. Anyone who is 16 weeks or further along in a pregnancy can apply at any point of their pregnancy. And then as long as their baby's born today or after, they can apply.
Will lives be changed because of this?
Absolutely. Just having that extra cushion of funds, it helps to reduce homelessness. It helps to keep food on the table. It helps to pay utilities. It just helps to bring a sense of security when it comes to those early years of life with their child. And moms can smile bigger knowing that my bills are paid and I can spend this time with my baby.
That, in the end, is the bottom line. All right, details one more time, please, Elise Green, on how to find out more information of RX Kids on behalf of course, you. And I know MSU's College of Human Medicine doing great things as well.
Yeah, you can go to www.rxkids.org to learn information there, as well as www.firststepskent.org, where you can learn information about First Steps Kent and find my contact information if you need help filling out your application or would like to learn more about RX Kids.
Because the first steps are important.
Yes, they are.
That's a whole other conversation, which we will have in the future. Elise Green, Outreach Manager, First Steps Kent, thank you for this conversation when it comes to RX Kids and making sure families are taken care of. Take care to you.
Thanks for having me.
New data showing how colleges of osteopathic medicine are filling a void in health care. How are the schools strengthening local economies, primary care access, and medical research? Important to know so we get the best. Dr. Robert Kane, President and CEO of the American Association of Colleges of Osteopathic Medicine, on the line. Thank you for your service, Dr. Kane.
Thank you, and happy to be with you.
Appreciate it. I want to ask why osteopathic medicine is so important to the future of healthcare, but remind us of the work of osteopathic medicine. What is this niche?
So osteopathic medicine is one of two medical degrees in the United States. Both those degrees are fully licensed to practice medicine and surgery independently and without restriction. Our particular degree focuses on how medicine should be delivered through a lens of the whole person, body, mind, and spirit. So it predates much of the popularity of that that's developed over the past couple of decades. So we have a set of tenets that guide our approach to patient and make sure that we are hopefully leading with a humanistic approach and following with all the science that makes it good care delivery.
Thank you for that. Hence, I turn to the question, why is this niche so important to the future of healthcare?
Yeah, well, the longstanding approach to the practice of medicine that we've had is, I think, today much more clearly aligned to what patients are asking for. You know, as I mentioned, we've been promoting health and prevention and what today is called primary care for more than a century. But it's only recently become something that people are saying, wow, we really need that. And so osteopathic medical education teaches our students to focus on the person in front of them as a whole person and to think about a health orientation to the conversation that's going to occur. Prepare to take care of disease, trying to promote your health. There's definitely a connection to how communication and connecting with the patient is taught. Simple things like eye contacts, a hand on the shoulder that help build trust and develop a relationship that then can lead to the best care possible. The good part is that health promotion and prevention mindset is taught whether you enter primary care or specialty care. And we really try to think about how do we improve the function of the patient, not just reduce their symptoms.
Appreciate that reality. So expanding on that, the role that colleges of osteopathic medicine play in training future physicians, and this does come down to supporting local economies?
Yeah, the two things that I think are important as we think about the question that you're asking is, first of all, that strong emphasis on whole person care, that we immerse our students into that experience. Well, it's not a surprise that more of them decide to enter into primary care, things like family medicine, internal medicine, pediatrics. About 30% of today's medical students are earning the DO degree. That's roughly 10,000 students per day that are eventually going to enter into the workforce. And from starting to answer the economy question, about 40% of our students will graduate and stay in the state where they train. So that's important to begin to add those physicians not only to the workforce, but what that means to the spending power in the state. Opening a college of medicine results in new jobs. Like the average DO school will employ 700 people. Those are going to be faculty, leaders, supporting roles, many of them brought into the community, so new individuals moving in. Think about what that means, housing and other impact that occur. So there's jobs that are associated with the school, and then the jobs that are elevated because of the presence of the school in the community. Again, spending power to those. Why is that important? 40% of our schools are located in communities that are rural adjacent, and 50% are in underserved areas. So the addition of jobs in those communities can be important not only to the health of the people, but to the health of the community.
Dr. Robert Kane with us, President and CEO, the American Association of Colleges and Osteopathic Medicine, putting the spotlight on filling the doctor shortage and helping the local economy. What kinds of research are colleges of osteopathic medicine leading?
Well, it probably won't surprise you based upon the words that, you know, repeated in different questions here about primary care and whole person care and prevention, that our schools and their research mission tend to heavily emphasize primary care, rural health, healthy aging, things that affect the nervous system, the muscles, the bones, the joints, and then topics that address health and prevention. One of the things that's probably important for listeners to know, and one of the things that we think is exciting and a difference of our community versus our MD colleagues, an awful lot of the research done by the MD community is happening inside large university-based research centers. Ours tends to focus on getting into the communities and connecting with the people in the places where the care is being delivered, where 80% of care, in fact, in the United States is being delivered. So that creates an opportunity, especially if your own physician is involved in the research, to build trust around research and hopefully improve the health of the communities.
And, of course, I have to ask why research funding matters for osteopathic medical schools.
Yeah, the NIH spends about $50 billion a year on research. About half of that goes to the MD community and to a large amount of that to the university-based research centers. Less than $100 million. So the first statement was in billions, $50 billion, $25 billion. Less than $100 million a year actually goes to the DO school. So they have to look to other resources to be able to try to complete what is really very important research. If we're thinking about all of those topics that I mentioned, primary care, prevention, healthy aging, and so forth. So we continue to advocate across the U.S. to increase that so we can get the right dollars into those communities and hopefully be able to advance more life-altering and system-changing research.
Wonderful. Keep up your good work with your leadership role, Dr. Kane, President and CEO of the American Association of Colleges of Osteopathic Medicine. What's a good resource for us, please?
AACOM.org, ACOM.org is our website, wealth of information there about osteopathic medical education, osteopathic medicine, other work, and our advocacy.
Thank you very much. Take care.
Thank you for having me.
Your inspiration for this day, according to Leo Tolstoy, everyone thinks of changing the world, but no one thinks of changing himself or herself. There we are. Hope you enjoy the show. I'm Shelley Irwin. Have a great day.